Rita Durant speaking. I am going to be interviewing Maestro Roland Fiore, who has graciously consented to be here this evening. I'm very pleased to have Maestro Fiore here this evening, and we'll begin our interview now for the New Hope Historical Society Oral History Project. Good evening, Roland. Thank you so much for coming.
Good evening, Rita. This evening has started so auspiciously, mainly because of the fact that we are together. And our lovely little repast was fabulous, and I love being in your home.
Oh, thank you so much. I think we forgot to say what date it was, too, and I think this is important. This is a beautiful August evening, and right at this moment, the Olympics are going on television. It's the 3rd of August, 1984. And I think it's an important date because I understand the U.S. teams are doing rather well.
I'm thrilled, even though the Russians aren't here and some of the Germans, at the fact that our Americans are so geared to major efforts that they are achieving world records, which speaks for itself.
Exactly. It's nice to talk about other people, but I really do want to hear about you, Roland. Tell me, how did you happen? A person like you, a New Yorker, how did you happen to come to a little place like New Hope, Pennsylvania?
Well, frankly, I had practically nothing to do with it. But being married to Victoria Sherry, the prima donna, of course, is Victoria Fiore through marriage. many years ago, she came from New York City to do some leading roles for St. John Terrell in that marvelously auspicious music theater or music circus, whatever they called it, the first of its kind in America. And she, Victoria, was exposed to the notable beauties of the country and the quality of the feeling of Bucks County. And then I was introduced to it by having come here to meet her at some point, so that we both realized this was quite a fabulous place.
You were married at the time?
Yes.
I see. And this was sometime in the early part of the history of the music theater?
Yes.
Was it the music circus?
I think it was called the music circus.
And that was the one that was over in Lambertville?
Yes, in Lambertville, sort of a music mountain up there. And St. John had this circular tent, theater on the round, which of course made national headlines and then was copied all over America. It was a wonderful idea. And I saw Victoria, I think, in one of the productions. I was tied up in the summer period conducting my own Starlight Theater series in Kansas City, a 9,000-seat stadium.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yes, with cast from Hollywood, the Metropolitan, and New York, so that I had my own work to do, too. But Victoria and I were very fortunate to have toured in the early years. I left the New York City Opera. I was on the conducting staff there. But the Schuberts hired Victoria to do some national tours of the operettas at Romberg. So we toured together, and then so we had a wonderful time going around together. And then I came to see her at the music show because I was free once, and I saw how beautiful Bucks County was.
Oh, and you were booked like so many people were.
Oh, no question about it. So beautiful, and fortunately, when we managed to find this fabulous old stone house on Stony Hill Road between Akutong and Street. At that point, we started meeting some of the marvelous personalities that were in this area from, again, it seems to me, New York, such as the great person and announcer Nelson Case, and Harry Henningsen, the great, wonderful cartoonist of the Penny Cartoons of the Herald Tribune.
Oh, really?
And our legendary Odette Myrtille, who owned Chez Odette, and she was a marvelous character. She made so many happy moments for us, and it goes right down the line with all these wonderful people.
Did she live there on Stony Brook, or was she just part of the New Hope scene?
She was part of the New Hope scene, and of course had this wonderful restaurant there. I think Odette Myrtille was in a class by herself, frankly.
Was she the lady who played in South Pacific, or was that something that I misunderstood?
Odette Myrtille, I don't have a complete byline on her totally in detail, Rita, but Odette was in about 26 films, Hollywood films.
Really?
Yes, and did some Broadway things. I don't believe that she was in South Pacific, but maybe she should have been in South Pacific, you know.
I see.
She was a fine violinist besides being an actress and a singer of sorts.
Oh, my goodness. She really did have
yes,
many,
yes.
She was a lady with many, many talents. And that is, of course, very scenic spot.
Oh, just beautiful.
River. It still is beautiful.
Yes, so beautiful.
So, of course, there were many people that had been attracted to New Hope for years. Did you know that there was an art colony that had, of artists, that is, painters?
We didn't realize this. We didn't realize this, and very interestingly, and some writers, of course, also, mm-hmm. but when we started the Promusica Orchestra of Bucks County, a series of chamber symphony concerts, which went on for about 9 years. The orchestra numbered about between 35 and 40, mostly personnel from the Philadelphia Orchestra and some of the advanced, marvelous instrumentalists from the Curtis Institute who came from all over the world. At that point, our president, at one time, Frank Brainerd, who now lives in Princeton, was living in the former home of, and here we go to your names in the theater,
yes.
Morse Hart, who was married to Kitty Carlisle.
Yes.
So that brought us into that, we're not having been with them personally, but we got that connotation. So that's where the writers were. George Kaufman, of course, was here, and Perlman, and a fairly good writer, James Michener. Incidentally, not too long ago, about 10, 11 years ago, the farmers had there's a little church on 263, the Trinity Church or something of that nature. Anyhow, they had a program. And they wanted James Mitchell to speak and Victoria and myself to do some music. And so the three of us were the program, and we were paid with a couple of bushels of wonderful wine sap apples. And I think it's one of the best salaries we ever received.
Oh,
but James Mitchell was marvelous in his talk.
Oh, so you have met the great man, then?
Yes, yes. I've had the great pleasure, besides, of course, I've done mostly opera, the Academy of Music, I was there for 10 years at the Lyric Opera. Douglas Paxson, our wonderful Mr. Paxson from up here, Doug Paxson's deceased husband, was chairman of the board, and I was very fortunate to become a very close friend of Douglas, and he seemed to care for me too, and we have some wonderful memories at the Racquet Club, and coming home from the opera rehearsals, he and I would have a little scotch and soda, which was his favorite drink, in one of his rooms at, you know, just on 202 there.
Yes.
The lovely Paxson home.
Oh, yes.
These are wonderful.
On the hill there.
It's on the hill.
Toward Holocon.
Correct. Just passing.
As you go down the hill
after
on
Lahaska.
By Lane.
That's right. Just past Bycroft Lane, and you're right there by their wonderful home. Mm-hmm. Douglas was a wonderful person, and besides being a wonderful gentleman, wealthy man, and a lawyer, he loved to compose. And in my training, I studied 12 years in New York composition besides my conducting with the great Vittorio Giannini, who was so marvelous. So I helped Douglas to finish one of his suites, which then was for church, which was performed at the Episcopal Church or Cathedral in Dawsdown, which I thought was interesting. This is something people may not know at all about Douglas Paxson.
And don't know about you either.
Yes.
But that is really amazing to hear that Douglas Paxson.
Yes, he loved to compose.
Church was this in Dawson?
It's the big Episcopal Church in Dawson, I think.
On Main Street.
Yes, Father Chisholm is the, whatever they call him, Episcopal, the pastor or whatever.
Right. Okay. Well, this is fascinating to hear about all these local people that we've heard names, these fascinating people.
Yes,
we've heard about them
for
so long, and to think that you knew them. How about painters? Did you know any painters
at
that time? Mr. Redfield was painting.
Redfield was painting, and I've seen a lot of his wonderful works at Douglas Paxson's and Adele Paxson's home, of course. Victoria and I are very, very close friends of a contemporary artist who's so wonderful, William Smith, the painter.
Oh, yes.
And we're family friends with him and Pearl, of course. They live on Windy Bush Road.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at their home once a few years ago, and Bill explained to us that he had had Carl Sandburg, the great poet, staying at their place while Bill was doing sketches for a new stamp for Washington, which he was commissioned to do. So that tied it in very beautifully, I thought.
Oh my goodness, well, Carl Sandburg is one of my favorite people because
he
was poet laureate of Illinois.
Oh, I didn't
where I'm from.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Absolutely.
Touché.
I think it would be interesting too to know about not only painters, but it seemed to me there were some paintings in the house when you bought them.
This was fascinating. And the home that we bought, which is on Stony Hill Road between Aquitaine and Street, mm-hmm. very old stone house, was at that time the domicile of Rosa DeYoung, married to Mr. DeYoung, the lawyer. I think they were separated at the time, Rita. But Rosa DeYoung was a very close friend of Gertrude Stein, which name should connote quite a bit to anyone.
Oh, absolutely.
And we found an unfinished portrait, which is supposed to be Gertrude, and we still have it in our home over there.
It might be extremely valuable.
Yes. Another thing which is most interesting, apropos of performers, Sylvan Levin, the time that I was studying in New York, was the musical director of WR, and did a very fine job, a very fine conductor, pianist. And he was the son-in-law of Rosa DeYoung, and he spent many, many times and months at the home that we live in now. And Dick Spicer, who had the Selective Eye store downtown in New Hope, was the stepson or whatever of Sylvan Levin. So when we moved into the house, Rosa DeYoung died. We moved in, and Dick Spicer was fairly young, then wasn't married to Marion yet, said, God, I've always been in this house, and I love it so. So we turned, and I said, well, it's still your house. You have an open invitation to be here anytime you want. So we spent many, many times with us having dinners and all, and until he got married, and then he left.
Oh, dear. Well, I think it's just fascinating to think that you knew St. John Terrell in the olden days.
Yes, St. John.
In the olden days, if you've heard the expression.
Yes, yes.
But I was kind of excited to know that some of the celebrities that have been coming into town recently were old friends of yours, like DeRosa.
Well, Julius La Rosa,
La Rosa
is a fascinating situation. At Starlight Theatre in Kansas City, I've had all of the artists you can think of in America perform, whether it be Ginger Rogers from the movies and Trovatich, or whether it would be Walter Castle from the Metropolitan Opera in some sort of work.
Really?
And Victoria, our Victoria was prima donna there too. And Victor Borg, of course, I had a wonderful week with him there. We had a wonderful time over there together. Even Liberace was there at one point with his brother George conducting the orchestra. So I had a week off at that time. So it just went on and on, the connoisseur. But getting back to Julius La Rosa, this is very amusing to me because we used to have the repertoire of Starlight Theater. Richard Burgos, our producer from New York, would use the artists who fit best the roles of the operettas or operas or musical plays that we did without a PR gimmick. But when television came into the scene, we had to start bringing in television personalities, whether they were ideally equipped to be part of the production or not. And there's where Julius La Rosa comes in. He was contracted to do for us Kiss Me, Kate, this Shakespearean script and music, and Julius was an entirely different field. I said, how is Julius La Rosa going to be able to do this? Well, he worked like a fiend and did a very, very competent job. And as we know now, he was here, you know, last year, I believe, at the Playhouse.
Yes.
He's come a long way, and he's such a fine artist in that field.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of him.
Now, Julius La Rosa, was he here in this performance? Was this in Kansas City, or was that here?
It was in Kansas City in a major production, because, you know, we had a 9,000-seat stadium with major sets and all, and he was in a really very fine production.
Yes.
And the script is very complex. It's sort of Shakespearean through Cole Porter, of course, and the score needs a very fine singing voice. Julius was sort of a crooner. Alfred Rake was so famous in New York, as you recall, Rita, years ago, doing that part of Petruchio. But he did a very good job, and our microphone systems at the stadium, they were awfully good. We had telephoned mics from Germany and all, so it worked out fine. But he's come a long way, and I heard his memorabilia of Oscar Hammerstein, the little one-man show he did here at the Playhouse. We were guests of his, and he did a fabulous job. Just fabulous.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
He is a very gifted man.
Very gifted.
And when we were having all the interesting people appear at the Playhouse, in New Hope, did you know them then? I mean, were you a part of that group then, Or were you separated?
Separated. There was no connection whatsoever.
I see.
Actually, when we started the Promissive Orchestra concerts, our first couple of concerts were in the Bucks County Playhouse.
Where were they?
We had a small string ensemble type thing, about 25 or so. But then we expanded and we came over to Central Bucks East. Which was
in Doylestown.
Right here on, just past the Lahaska, no, the Central Bucks East Auditorium, just by the Bountiful Acres.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Right on 202.
I see.
Then we found that this was a little too large for the quality of the type of repertoire that I was giving orchestrally, and we moved very happily into the Holicon Junior High Auditorium, right next to the CB East over there on the Holicon Road. And, that
and
was
when
us.
Was that?
I think the last concert that I gave was about 1973, so it's not that far off, and we gave 9 years of concerts with international stars as guest artists.
I understand you did. And tell me some of the guest stars that you had.
Those that people would remember, I would think, was we had Susan Starr, the fabulous pianist, made two appearances with us, and in one of my final concerts, the fabulous Anna Moffat, gorgeous girl, did one concert for us, and Mary Costa was with us, who was so beautiful, also from the Metropolitan. And from Europe, a magnificent, legendary composer-pianist from Paris, he flew in to do the program, Alexander Cherepnin, the son of the great Russian Nikolai Cherepnin.
Oh, my God.
He's a composer-pianist, and he played his bagatelles for piano, superb European, international human. And then I conducted one of his chamber symphony concerts for flute, violin, and orchestra. And we have photographs of him in our home and with George Nakashima, who's a magnificent friend of ours, too.
Good. Yes. You know, I'm glad you brought up George Nakashima, because it was on the tip of my tongue just a few minutes ago to ask him, when we were talking about artists, and it just kind of slipped my mind, how could George Nakashima slip anybody's mind?
But it's impossible.
He did. Isn't that terrible?
You know, Rita, you and I, being of Italian background, I will bring up a phrase from Italian, a phrase which is so beautiful to connote what George Nakashima is. And the phrase is fuori classe, and literally translates it means beyond classification.
He is, isn't he? He is a very dear man, too.
We're family with them. It's so funny. Victoria's sister, Irene, is godmother to one of the children of Mira, the George's daughter, and we have been family. We come from such disparate and different cultures,
right.
Victoria, myself, and George, and Marion, and Amir, and the rest, and Kevin, his son, and I are very, very close. And yet, the connota factor is the human element of the gemütlich feeling in the world that brings you together. Well, gemütlich is sort of a Viennese dramatic feeling, which means a quality, a bond of togetherness from a feeling of mutual understanding of the world.
Oh, how lovely. Now say that word again.
Gemütlich.
Oh, I love that.
Yes, it means like, you know, tua tua in the Italian would say. It means equality, a bond of empathy or of simpatico. The Italian would have it, simpatico.
Very nice. And you have known George a long time.
A very long time. We have photographs in our music room of some of the children, and they all look so, even Kevin looks like a little boy, but he's grown up now because we've known each other quite a few years, and it's been a magnificent association. Victoria and I have about 23 Nakashima pieces in our home now.
I know.
So I think there is a little connection there.
Yes, and they are such beautiful pieces.
Oh.
Your home is just lovely, and you have such elegant good taste. And I especially appreciate some pieces that were made, I understand, for the Rockefeller home. And
yes.
You must tell us about
That's a story in itself, because George designed all this furniture for the Governor Rockefeller home, and Happy Rockefeller, being there, of course, too. A set of six benches were made, beautiful, magnificent benches with a 100-year-old Japanese fabric. But Happy didn't like those particular sets of six magnificent low benches with the fabric, and they came back to Nakashima, and Victoria got two of them, and George has the other four. We called them Happy's Rejects.
Oh, they're beautiful. Isn't that nice to have them? Such beautiful pieces.
They are.
I really, I especially like the music stand that you have. That Mr. Nakashima made.
It's one of a class because he made it for me. It's a Carpathian elm, the free form where the stand is, and then the base is made in its own, I think, sort of a rosewood, but with the little notches for a taller singer or a mm-hmm. smaller singer to be adjusted and these kinds of things.
I think that we would be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that you are now director of music at St. Martin's at our little Catholic church.
Yes, I love doing it.
And it is absolutely one of the most divine things in the world to listen to your choir on Sunday morning, because they are now so good after you have worked with them for this past year.
They are people who do not pursue music as a career, of course, and the concept is to bring to them and with them the feeling of the message and the spiritual message of phrasing in music. Music is not necessarily just notes or a sound, but it is a quality, mysterious quality of permeating a message of the spirit and of the life force and of the happiness of being alive. And through that you get certain phrase curves, which are beautiful, and they're doing it marvelously. I think they're a wonderful group. They've caught on to what I'm driving at, because they had it all along. I just opened up a little door, that's all.
Oh, but you make them sound so good. And of course, I can always hear Victoria singing up there when there is a soprano part that Victoria sings, and it sounds like, I feel sometimes like I've died and gone to heaven.
Victoria's got a voice.
Oh, she is fabulous. Maestro Fiore, I understand that you have been commuting from New Hope to Philadelphia for the many years that you've lived here, and you have worked at the Academy of Vocal Arts in that fair city.
You know, Rita, that Academy of Vocal Arts is an incredible project instituted by Del Paxson's I believe aunt, Mrs. Clarence Warden. They set up a trust fund many, many years ago, I think about 47 years ago, to have an exclusive opera scholarship school for great opera singers from all parts of the world. And they would be given a 4-year scholarship to be trained by a great faculty from wherever, in New York or Europe. And this has been a sort of a second artistic home for me over there. So Douglas, of course, Adel Paxson still is the head of the school. Douglas and I would be at our opera rehearsals and performances at the Academy of Music with the Lyric Opera. I was on the conducting staff there. And the school, it was like en famille, the whole thing. And we would get back to Bucks County after the rehearsals or whatever, and he would go to his home, he might have a quick drink, and I'd come back over to Stony Hill.
Oh, my word.
Yes.
Well, you certainly have had many young people that you've worked with and through the years. Have you developed any talents in particular that you are especially proud of?
Yes. I think we have a couple of Metropolitan Opera right now who are just marvelous. The great basso star, James Morris, was one of our students, and of course he made such a tremendous career. And immediately, right now, Vernon Hoffman, baritone of the Academy of Vocal Arts from Texas, is now in Victoria with our Piccolo Opera Philadelphia, and he's coming in October to sing Tosca.
Oh, how wonderful. One of my favorites.
He's getting a release from the Metropolitan Opera to be with us, and he lives in Newtown, might mention him. Unusual.
Neighbor.
Yeah, neighbor of ours.
How about this?
Then, to close that particular group of people, there's so many wonderful young artists that have been with us. One that I got signed by one of the New York managers is Lando Bartolini from Florence. He studied with us at the Academy. And it's been a long road for Lando, but I got him signed by the Barrett management, and then he went on to the New York Opera. Magnificent voice, but not quite the fluid type of actor that the Americans might expect, seeing so much television and drama, you see? And
yes. And
it was the voice that was the great thing. But now he has come full circle, and he is a leading tenor at the La Scala of Milan, the prestigious Milan, and he's
wonderful.
Been at the Paris Opera, and he's coming back to Philadelphia to do the opera gala with Renata Scotto and Riccardo Muti in the Philadelphia Orchestra, January 26th.
Oh, what a thrill that must be for you,
I should say. He's sung with, in fact, he appeared. One of the concerts we gave with the Pro Musica, we had Victoria appearing with Lando Bartolini, and it was a beautiful concert. The two sang in concert, And we close with the final duet from Andrei Chenier, Giordano, when both of them are killed at the guillotine. And it was magnificently reviewed by David Barnett, our wonderful friend, the critic from the Intelligencer and the Bucks County Courier-Times.
Oh,
there's a little story.
I should say. I understand that you were involved also with Mario Lanza.
Well, I was a young assistant conductor at the New York Opera at that time.
Were?
Yeah, in New York. And Mario was around New York at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked me once if he could do a little coaching with me while I was working with our own New York opera singers. He wanted to get in with that group. And I was using a studio at Carnegie Hall at 56th Street side. So Mario worked with me for about 3 months, and it was a very beautiful voice, but in a personality which was a little uncontrolled, a little undisciplined, a little wild. So one day I meet him and he says, "Oh God, Maestro, I have the greatest piece of luck. I've been signed by MGM movie company to do films." And I said, "Well, congratulations, Mario, but deep down inside I realized that would be the end of the possible opera career, because there'd be no more studying. And without studying, you cannot do opera."
Yes, I know. I think I've been to your house one day when one of your students came to practice. And he has been practicing with you for many years.
Maybe.
Who was that young man?
Was it Bogdan Chaplinsky?
Yes.
Yes, the Ukrainian tenor. He's,
yes,
he's appeared in Carnegie Hall with the American Symphony already.
Fabulous.
Was that a voice?
Oh, it was just...
You know, Rita, before I dropped on Mario, I was conducting the St. Cecilia Symphony in some records at the RCA Studios in Rome. I don't remember how many years ago, maybe 15, 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Mario Lanza was in Rome at that time making those terrible, dreadful... films, you know, just to make some money, and that was at the beginning of the end for him, and that's when he died, a little after that, at that time.
You know, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that you now have a very interesting program going down in Philadelphia, and it's called La Piccola
Opera of Philadelphia,
which means...
intimate opera, small or intimate opera.
The intimate
I took it after the name of Piccola Scala Milano, because Milano has the big La Scala, and then the Piccolo, where you do more intimate productions, where you don't spend a zillion dollars, but with a very fine artist. And so that's what we have in Philadelphia.
We think it's charming. You know, my husband John and I go all the time, as often as we can, and we love it. We think as you say, it's very intimate and casual. And
you're practically on the stage as this is going on. And we've had some of the old, mature artists appearing in it, and some of the younger artists. Brennan Hartman, as I said, is coming from the Met to do the Baron Scarpia role, the police chief of Rome, on October 5th. So there's a disparate and an interesting combination of artists in it.
And could you mention some of the operas that you've done in this, say, like the last season?
We've been featuring Madame Butterfly. We've had the Trovatore. We did a very interesting production of Carmen. By the way, Bernard Hartman came to do the Escamillo, the bullfighter, in that Carmen production. We've done Don Pasquale, a wonderful production of La Boheme with a great new tenor. He's at the Academy of Vocal Arts, and he's going to really make it. His name is Richard Burke. You can pick out some people, you can just see they're going to do
they
it.
They have what it
they
takes.
Have it. The voice is there, and the certain general charismatic overtones, which makes for success eventually.
Right.
Given the right guidance, of course. These were some of the productions.
Sure.
By the by, very interestingly, on December 28th, we're going to give for the matinee performance for the Pennsylvania Hospital in Philadelphia, a benefit performance of Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, that is just charming. Yes. I adore that, the music.
I'd like you to be there on the evening performance. I want you to hear it.
Oh, thank you so much. I especially love the music. What is it? Bless This House.
That's right, of course.
Yes.
An incredible theme, isn't it?
Isn't that beautiful?
Oh,
yes.
God.
You know, Roland, you're married to a very, very beautiful lady. Victoria Sherry is beautiful today, probably, as she has always been.
She has never changed. It evolves, but there's no change. She's such a beautiful person, creature, and visually also. This was such a fascinating thing, how this all happened, because we were neighbors in Jersey City, just across the river from New York, where I was studying and then performing, and she was a few years younger than I, and Che sarà sarà, they say in Italian, it was meant to be. Interestingly, she started working with me, and I was preparing her musically at that time. We were courting, I was courting her, but also having had enough discipline to be preparing her seriously musically. And I prepared many operatic roles with her, because initially her feeling was to be basically an opera. She became one of America's greatest prima donnas of operetta.
Really?
And of course, yes. And toured, of course, with Sigmund Romberg for 2 seasons with Sigmund, the great composer of Student Prince and New Moon and Blossomtime.
I love that.
Yes. So this was a wonderful, wonderful time. But interestingly, we were very close friends with Ramon Vinay, the Chilean tenor, who sang with us at the New York Opera and then became Toscanini's great Otello in the great NBC production of Otello. And Vinay brought Victoria to the Met. And this is fascinating if you just, your mind just opens up, because Max Rudolph was artistic director of the Met at that time and a conductor. And of course, Max Rudolph has been with us. He's in Philadelphia right now. He's at Curtis and he conducts the concerto solo. So he's now a native Philadelphian as I am. But he was so interested in Victoria that he was preparing her to become a member of the Met as a soprano of the Met, but she continued in operetta.
Oh.
Isn't that fascinating?
And you were married where?
We were married on a very formal high Catholic high mass at Sacred Heart Church in Jersey City. And I'll never forget, one of my friends was an organist, and he said, Roland, I want to have a real musical program for this beautiful wedding. And Victoria had the most exquisite wedding gown and all. So he had a quartet do a mass from St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. And one of my friends, Alfredo Chigi, was baritone of the Chicago Opera. He was the soloist in the service. I was so distracted by all this magnificent music, I said, I'm not going to be able to follow this wedding ceremony.
Horrible.
No, but
don't ever admit that.
But being honest about it, it was so gorgeous. Victoria said, this is glorious.
Well, as long as Victoria felt that
we got through the ceremony.
All right. Because she is such a beautiful woman, you know. And incidentally, there is a lovely picture photograph of the two of you on your piano that always, you look like you belonged in the movies. You're both such handsome and beautiful people, and you were in a uniform.
Yes, I achieved the rank of Chief Petty Officer in the Maritime Service and Naval Reserve. I was at Kings Point Academy, where brother was head of the Science Department later on. My brother is a retired captain of the Navy. So this was a wonderful thing. So I had that uniform in that one particular picture, which is marvelous. Victoria is now producer of the Piccolo Opera Philadelphia, and therefore she is above me in command, and so I sort of kind of take my orders from Victoria.
I noticed too that you did something very interesting recently, and that was a first time antique opera.
I'm glad you remember. I had forgotten about that. We did last season a performance of the oldest American opera, and they claimed that the author was one of the officers of George Washington, and it was done for the Pennsylvania Hospital in Philadelphia, which is the oldest hospital in America, at the oldest theater in America, the Walnut, and Walnut Street, and the oldest American ballet opera. There's one of your real PR gimmick lines, right?
I should say. But I saw you do a performance of this opera at the Washington Crossing.
Washington Crossing, George Washington
outdoor
Crossing.
Outdoor theater.
Yes.
Yeah, on a summer's evening, and it was absolutely charming.
Charming work, wasn't
it? Yes, and what was the name of it again?
Well, it was called, it had a double title. It was called The Disappointment or The Force of Credulity.
Oh, yes.
One of those things.
Now, I understand the reason that it was forbidden, that it was that people were not allowed to perform this opera. Originally was that there was a great similarity between some rather unattractive characters in the opera and some rather prominent Philadelphia people.
Exactly.
Is that true?
And this kind of spoof, or whatever you want to call it, was very upsetting to them, so that it was a forbidden opera. I'll never forget the we had a marvelous piece of material, publicity material, that the Pennsylvania Household Auxiliary ladies put together. They had a painting of the digging up of this one treasure, and it said the opera that was forbidden in America. So the whole thing made everyone feel they must come to see it now because it was forbidden.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
And now, who was the composer again?
They used some of the popular melodies of the day in an arrangement. So it was no one single composer.
Oh, I see.
Yes, and actually, in the overture, and just in one part of the opera, the very famous Yankee Doodle, Winter Town, was
really?
The first time it was heard on stage.
Really?
Yes, it was in the overture.
Oh my goodness.
By the way,
was that called a folk opera then?
A folk opera.
See.
In the pit at the Walnut Street Theater, I had members of the concerto soloists, I forgot who was so superb, and one of America's greatest harpsichordists, Temple Painter, the legendary Temple Painter, was on harpsichord. This made me very happy.
And who was that? Temple?
Temple Painter is his name. Temple Painter.
Oh my goodness.
Fabulous harpsichord.
And he plays the harpsichord.
Yes, one of America's greats. And he was at the harpsichord, and we had a lovely association together.
I love to hear the harpsichord play.
Yes.
That must have been lovely. Now, he wasn't there when I heard it.
Yes.
And I feel like I've been cheated.
Oh, the walnut.
I'm supposed to have to do the whole thing again.
I know it. We must.
What surprised me especially was that it was really kind of a risque little drama.
Yes.
For a 200-year-old opera.
You know, Rita, we had the girl who did one of the risque scenes lives in this area now, had been at the Academy of Vocal Arts years ago, and she'd been one of my students.
Really?
Her name then was Deborah Kovner, I believe, and she's very opulent.
Yes.
Very, glamorous.
Exquisite.
You know, and then the scene with the sailor was wonderful. So this.
Oh, it was great.
Rather risque, but charming.
Yes, it was gay, but very cute. I was just trying to picture that scene back in the colonial days, and wondering if I was just didn't have the right idea about our colonial fathers. Perhaps.
I think that we may reassess our feelings about it after that one.
Oh dear. Well, is there anything else that you would like to contribute to this? I feel like I'm sort of running out of questions.
You know, Rita, the whole gamut of performing in America and in the world, which I've done, I've been enrolled in South America, where I was in Frankfurt at one time,
is that
you meet wonderful people. And the communication through theater and music is very much a universal one. Doesn't matter what the language or the form of music, as long as we are together and comparing notes on that very high plane, which is art, the imitation of life rather than life itself, and takes us away from life, which at times can be just a little sticky, and it just makes us feel a little more pleasant.
Very, very nice. The thing that amazes me so much about you, Roland, is your absolutely gigantic talent. I don't know how else to phrase it. I have seen you work. I've seen you transpose. I've seen you work with singers. I've seen you play an entire opera and conduct at the same time. I've heard you do so many things. And your talent, really, I am very much in awe of it. And in spite of it, you are really quite a humble person, but very much involved in what you're doing and extremely creative.
Thank you.
A really totally fascinating man. It's really a joy knowing you.
Thank you, Rita. You know how I feel about our mutual friendship. That's fait accompli, as the French would put it. I want to, before I close, give a feeling of connote of thanks to the three great maestri that I studied in New York City who were represented the epitome of Europe. I worked with the Vittorio Giannini in composition, who comes from the famous Giannini family, and Madame Gregory was the great voice teacher, Curtis was his sister, and Dussolina Giannini, the great soprano, was also a sister.
Really?
And then I worked in operatic repertoire with the great French conductor Jean Morel, from Paris. And he was at the Met, head of the Oxford Department at Juilliard, and I was one of the staff of him at the New York Opera.
You studied at the Juilliard
No, I studied at Jean Morel's home at Park Avenue. I was a private artist student.
Oh, my.
Yes, yes. And my conducting teacher, to close on these wonderful men, all in New York City, was Tibor Sherley, a Hungarian, who was Béla Bartók's disciple in composition, the great Béla Bartók from Hungary. And Tibor finished, when Béla Bartók died, Tibor was given the honor of finishing the piano concerto Béla Bartók, which was then played in Carnegie Hall, and that was at that performance.
And that was an especially...
especially auspicious and prestigious evening. Tibor Sherley lived in a little brownstone mansion or home, little apartment, across from the Plaza Hotel in New York City, next to the Paris Theater at 58th Street. And Giannini lived at 57th Street, next across the street from Carnegie Hall. And Jean Morel lived at Park Avenue, just a few blocks away. So this was our home over there.
Well, you certainly have had a wonderful career, and it's just marvelous to think that after so many years of performing, that we just seem to go on and on and on. When you have such a wonderful talent, you just never have to give up, do
you? It's our mission.
Absolutely.
We serve and we enjoy serving.
You said something that I just simply can't repeat, and I think it was, it had something to do with art.
Art is an imitation of life.
Yes, and you just said that, I think. But there was something else that you used to say all the time when we were practicing in the choir, and that was, I wish I could remember what it was right now, but it was something like, art is all, not art is an imitation of life.
Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't an imitation, not in the choir sense. I would have said something else there, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And I can't really repeat it, but I think one of the memories I have of you especially that I will always carry with me is Roland sitting behind that organ and playing in that beautiful church. That is such a lovely
Nakashima's
church.
Beautiful.
And Nakashima's, and the cross right over
something?
Your head, because I would sit right in the center and facing you. And then just behind you was that beautiful Nakashima altar, and then that lovely cross.
So you saw this whole picture?
Yes, I would see this whole picture, and it's something that it was a treat. It's a part of New Hope that I'll always remember.
I'm so happy. That's wonderful.
Yeah.